Radio St. Pete presents Typewriter Talks with Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit.
Hello, welcome to Typewriter Talks. This podcast features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. My name is Maureen McDowell, and I'm the founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. On Typewriter Talks, we discuss all kinds of writerly topics, hoping to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Today, we are happy to welcome Curtis Davis. Curtis was born and raised in Tampa, Florida. He has been writing and performing poetry since a youth in high school and has since traveled all over the states competing in international, national, and regional poetry slam competitions. In 2018, he was ranked the 8th poet in the world after becoming a finalist in the Individual World Poetry Slam held in San Diego, California. He is the creative director of the nonprofit Heard 'Em Say Youth Arts Collective, and Curtis is also the co-founder of Grow House, an artist collective dedicated to growing community, growing culture, and growing creatives through poetry and hip hop. Welcome, Curtis.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you for being here for us. And so tell us what you're working on right now.
Well, I have, as far as my personal poetry and works like that, I have a chapbook that I'm currently trying to put out. It's a series of poems that all center around not to sound too morbid, but centers around death and just my feelings around death and my personal experiences with it. I wrote all of the poems in it within about a span of like 45 to about 2 months. I was going to say 45 days, not 45 months, but it took me about 2 months. I wrote all of the poems. I was trying to write a poem a day. It's called Hula Hooping with Halos. I'm hoping to have it out at the beginning of the new year. It's about 50 poems in it.
That's awesome. Yeah. We actually took over Yellow Jacket Press, and we're going to announce the opening of a chapbook contest January 15th. So it's kind of perfectly timed. Bought up chapbooks. So that's awesome. That's so exciting. So usually you're a performance poet primarily, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I actually haven't ever put out like a book of my work at all. So this will be the first time doing that.
What called you to do a chapbook instead of like a full length book?
I guess my inexperience with putting out books and things like that, and I wanted to be able to kind of self-publish. I know you can self-publish like books through Amazon and things like that, but I wanted to kind of make it more, I guess, grassroots kind of thing. But yeah, mainly due to my inexperience, I would say, though.
That's good, though, that it's good to talk to you, especially as we're like basically reigniting Yellow Jacket Press, because it will be considered like a micro press, because
okay.
The chapbooks that we're going to be doing are 16 to 20 pages long, not including like the front and back matter, but we're wanting to do poetry, but also fiction, short form fiction, and also hybrid books as well. So it's cool to like, it's like you're reconfirming that we're on the right path to do this, because when you're just getting your work out there in it, you know, you've gotten your work out there as a performance poet, but as you're saying, it's a nice way to have like a launching pad that isn't a longer form.
It's definitely something that's I would say that's needed. So I'm happy you guys are bringing that back, because there's a lot of writers in this community that could benefit from having someone to go through for that.
Yeah, and it will be only for Florida writers. So it'll also be like just this microcosm that we'll be tapping into. So tell me what a typical day looks like for you as a writer. And when I say writer, I include that also for your performance poetry too. So
I mean, for me, especially with my performance poetry, a lot of the times I write when inspiration strikes, which could look a lot like just living day-to-day life and wondering like when I'm gonna ever write a poem again, and then something strikes and it just all comes out kind of thing. But my writing process is usually pretty long, especially with, I would say more so with performance poetry, because the way that I typically write is I'll, like I said, something will kind of just come to me and I'll use that as a starting point, or I'll have a concept for the poem that I want to write, or the message that I want to put out. And so I'll start with a baseline, and then kind of read it out. I'll read it out loud, and until basically I can think of the next line that goes with the words that I already have. And so usually by the time that I'm done with writing the piece, I'll have most of it memorized in my head, because as I'm writing it, I kind of focus on the performance part as well. So that way, when the poem is complete, I already have a good understanding of how I'm going to be performing it and reading it out loud. So typically, a lot of the times, it's just me walking around my apartment, reading lines out loud over and over again, and then going to write down the new lines that I come up with. So it's kind of almost kind of like freestyling, but a very long drawn out version of it.
So, have you always written that way, or how has your writing process changed over the years?
I would say no, I didn't always write that way. I really, as a younger writer, when I first started out doing poetry and writing, everything came to me a lot easier. I think when you're first starting out as a writer, you have a less critical eye, and you're like not as hard on yourself when you're producing. And so beforehand, I would just, those moments where you'd wake up at like 2 in the morning and just have your notepad next to you and write a whole poem right there on the spot, in the middle of the night. That doesn't really happen as much for me anymore, unfortunately. So over the years, I've had to be more intentional about my writing and really view it as a craft and not just something that I like to do. And so there's a poet named Anis Majgani. And he said in an interview one time that his father was a carpenter, and that's what he did every day. He couldn't just wake up and be like, I don't feel like being a carpenter today. Like he had to do that. And when you call yourself a poet or a writer, you kind of have to have the same mentality of like, you can't just wake up and decide that because you're not inspired, you're not going to write anymore. It's a muscle that you have to really work out and be intentional about. And so I try to keep that mindset. And so doing mainly like doing exercises, writing exercises, experimenting with writing form poetry, that really helps me get out of like a writer's block if I can have a structure that I have to fit my piece within, and kind of create a puzzle out of it. But really, it's just being more intentional about it. And as beforehand, it was just more something that I was good at and naturally that I was naturally good at. And now, as I've gotten older, it's something that I have to really work at more and try not to have as critical of an eye. And I'm Right now, I'm trying to get back to a point of where I can write just to write and not feel like everything that I produce has to be the most amazing thing in the world. But it's definitely challenging, especially in my written work, because I naturally write shorter poems. And it took me a while to get comfortable with that coming from a performance space, because typically with performance poetry, there's like your poem should be at least a minute long at minimum for it to be like really impactful. But with written work, it could be four lines and still be a very impactful piece. And so it took me a while to get comfortable with like, okay, I don't have to try to force myself to extend this poem. Like, it can be these four lines and just that's the poem, instead of having to feel like I have to like add more to it, and thus like changing the actual message that I started with, because I'm trying to put so much more into it and stretch it out. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really good to develop both those muscles of being in two totally different, I mean, I wouldn't say different genres, but different ways of bringing your work out into the world. Because I never thought about it like that from the performance element, because I've always just read from the written page. But there are some poems that are only really translate well on the page, and they don't really translate well performing. So I think that, and that's also interesting how you like are writing the poem as you go. And so, what are some of your major themes that you tend to focus on? Do you come back to the same themes or?
I would say I focus a lot on like my individual journey as a human, and just my experiences through life. I talk a lot about family in my work. I try to stray away from being like getting too political, only because I feel like for certain topics you have to be it's I feel like it's a disservice if you try to like do a political poem or any poem that requires like a heavy amount of research to be done, and not doing that research, and just like giving out like opinions, political opinions and whatnot through my work without being actually very knowledgeable about what I'm speaking on. So I try to stick to like what I know, and what I know is myself and my experiences and how I feel about life. My main thing is I like to try to convey very simple, seemingly like mundane day-to-day life that we experience, and make it sound and look beautiful, like trying to make people see that even the little things can be super impactful in your life, and to appreciate the small things, even though it may seem like it's nothing. It's like everything is connected in a way. But yeah, my work mainly centers around, I would say, my life experiences and family and things like that.
Well, I'm sure you've heard the term the personal is political. So in many ways, in the 70s feminism movement, that was the statement of, even just talking about our day-to-day lives, especially as women, it is a political, just keeping it really grounded in the day-to-day is still a political act, talking about, because we're all moving through life and trying to do our best. I think when you really break it down to it, we want our homes to be safe, we want our families to be safe, we want our communities to be safe, and we want to be able to be thrive and live our best lives. So I think even just not just writing about the personal, I think that's a beautiful gateway to all types of avenues of expressing
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And
ways
that's
to thrive and all the things.
And that's I would say like that's probably the most political I get is like when talking about self-identity and things like that, especially like being a mixed child growing up in a mixed household, and there's a lot that comes with being racially ambiguous and all of that. So I definitely delve into those topics. I really try to like stay away from telling anyone else's story. I'm really big on that, making sure that anything that I put out there is through something that I've personally experienced myself, because that's another thing I've learned throughout this whole journey of being a writer, is speaking your truth and making sure you're not speaking anybody else's. And if you do, to be very responsible about it, you know?
Yeah, and also like I think the human condition, all good art, you recognize yourself in it. So, if you're putting your stuff out there, other people that have similar experiences or have been through similar things, they'll reckon it'll be a mirror to their own life. And I think it's always a lovely thing to just stay in your lane.
Right, exactly.
In your lane. So with your poems, do you hear a line or how do you get an idea for it?
Yeah, so usually it'll be a certain line will come to me, and I'll go from there. Other times it could be something that I expect. A lot of times what it is for me personally, and again, this is from me writing about like personal life things, is I'll just be thinking about life and I'll make these connections that I didn't realize before. And that will really spark the inspiration to write about those things and how they're all connected. I would say for example, I have a poem that I talk about me being a mixed being me growing up being mixed and how my first week of seventh grade I cried every day after school because I was getting picked on a lot and I didn't feel like I really fit in. And that year I had moved from being in a predominantly white school to a school that was predominantly black. And so it was like a culture shock for me, but it was in a weird way because like the culture that I'm being shocked by is also a culture that I also belong to. And then my first year of college, I went to FAMU in Tallahassee, and that's a historically black school. And during my time there, like I really fell in love with myself and felt a lot more connected to my own blackness, and just the both experiences, like when I realized both experiences kind of mirror each other from my seventh grade to college, it really sparked something in like it when I made that connection, like it literally made me cry when I was thinking about it. And so things like that, like the when I'm like just thinking about life and making certain different connections about my experiences and how they relate not only to myself but to the world and other people. That's usually what I go off of.
Love that. I love that. That's one of the gifts of being a writer is to be able to make those connections. And
I feel I always say being a poet and a writer is like it's a special kind of person. Like we just think differently, you know?
yes, I'm often telling my loved ones that I don't live on this planet, and if I'm speaking
Right.
I'm spaced out, it's because I'm up in the poet writer clouds, like making connections, and then I'm sorry that I didn't necessarily hear about what you had for dinner. It's trying to
Right.
put together the meaning of the universe right now.
Exactly.
That's funny. Yeah, I get it. Believe me, I get it. So what would you tell your younger writer self?
Well, that's a good one. What would I tell my younger writer self? I would say, continue to write, continue to write for the love of writing, and never look at the reception of your work as an indicator of your own value, and that your all of your experiences are valid, and should be written about. Don't ever feel like you should compare your own life experiences with anybody else's. Write your truth and continue just to be yourself, and never try to be anybody else.
I love that. That's a good. So you work with kids, correct?
I do, yeah, through Heard Him Say.
So what exactly is your role with Heard Him Say, creative director, correct?
Yeah, I'm the creative director, which is just a title. But I mainly I do all the graphic design for Heard Him Say. I organize our monthly open mic. I lock in the features for it. I make the flyer for it. I also DJ for it now. And previously, we haven't actually. Because of unfortunately, because of engagement, we haven't had as much of our programming within the last couple years as we had previously. But in the past, I have also led workshops and what was a coach for our youth poetry slam team that we would take to the there's a festival and competition called Brave New Voices. And we would send a team there every year, and so I was a coach for that, helping the students get their work ready, and helping them on the performance. I focused more on the performance part of coaching, and my wife is in Christian. She would help a lot with the writing portion of the work, as far as coaching goes. But I actually started and Heard Him Say as a youth. It's been around for 16 years, and I started going to Heard Him Say in 2010, when I was a junior in high school, and it took me a while to come back. I always wanted to get back involved with Heard Him Say, as I was getting older, but it took me a while to feel comfortable enough to feel like I could actually, lead young minds and critique their work and help them get to the place that they want to get in their artistry without feeling like I still had a lot more work to do on myself first. But yeah, a few years ago I started getting back involved. I would say I think it was about 2017, 2018 that I started getting involved. And yeah, so now we just we I organize the monthly open mic, and definitely try to encourage the teams and give them any positive feedback or reinforcement that they need, as well as Heard Him Say contracts poets to for the Hillsborough County Poetry Jams, where we go into Hillsborough County schools and teach a workshop and do a mini poetry slam. And then there's a countywide poetry slam with all the winners from each school. So I'm also involved with that. That's going to be getting kicked back up this month, actually.
Cool. And what do you do with the grow house?
So Grow House, I started Grow House in 2017 originally on my own, and 2019 I brought my brother Dennis Amadeus in, and ever since then we've just been on the grind every day trying to make things happen. But basically I kind of do everything in Grow House. And then we have a collective of poets that helps us with all of our events. But yeah, I do a lot of the graphic design there as well. And organizing, we have several monthly shows that we do. Luckily we've gotten to the point where our collective really, really, helps us with a lot of the work. So we have different poets that host our events that are in our collective, as well as Dennis still hosts. I DJ for all of our shows now, but essentially me and Dennis kind of lead everything within Grow House and try to delegate certain tasks within our collective to help us, where our goal is to be our own venue. That caters to poetry and hip hop. Right now we have a small space in the Crest Building in Ybor City, that we teach workshops out of. So we do workshops every Wednesday. And then we have one on a Saturday as well. So right now we have a small space that we teach workshops out of. But eventually we hope to have a larger space where we can host all of our events and, as well as doing workshops and other community things, like providing resources for artists to like print their own, like make their own merchandise, and things like that, as well as hopefully a coffee shop, and like local artist, shop as well.
Oh, I love that. That's so exciting. And congratulations on your space at the Crest Building.
Thank you. Yeah, we're really happy to be there. We moved in December of last year, and it's just been really great, just to be so entrenched in the culture of Ybor and the other artists that are in the building with us.
Yeah, it's a good space.
It's really awesome. That's where we also host our poetry slam there once a month. Every fourth Saturday of the month, and that's been really great as well. And also heard him say we do our open mic in that building too. But the goal is to have, something that's all ours and that we have full
Yeah.
control over and things like that. But we're slowly getting there. This year has been our first experience of, paying rent. Even if it's a small portion, it's still a monthly bill that we got to make sure we're paying off. So we've been handling it well, and it's been making me really excited for the future.
Yeah, I was just in Minneapolis, and they have a coffee shop there that is a nonprofit. It's a social enterprise, and it's run by kids that have experienced homelessness. And yeah, and so like maybe that is an idea for your coffee shop, that it could be some kind of social enterprise where you're helping to the kids that are the poets are helping to run the coffee shop, and then it can turn into a place for them to perform their work too. And yeah, I think it's called Wonderfly. Wonderfly. I have to, yeah, it was wild. And they had like a whole mission statement, and because it was a social enterprise, and that helped fund the coffee shop to help fund everything else. And it was really, really cool to see these young people there working
That's
on.
awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
'Cause Dennis has done a lot of work with teens that have experienced homelessness and things like that.
Yeah.
So I know he would love that idea.
Social enterprises are kind of the way to go in some ways, for nonprofits. Having some Housing Works bookstore help deal with homelessness and AIDS And that's another social enterprise. So there's lots of models out there to work with. So who are some of your favorite authors or poets?
I would say one of my biggest influences has been Saul Williams. He's a really great poet, and he also does music and acts and things like that. But he was one of my biggest first influences, as well as actually just posted a picture of myself with him when I was younger. But Buddy Wakefield is another big one for me. And then I would say the third would be the poet I mentioned earlier, Anis Majdani. All three of those poets have had a heavy influence on my work and how I perform as well.
I would also, I don't know if you've read any of Langston Hughes. He is the master of short form poetry.
Oh, yeah. Definitely love Langston.
Yeah, he's the master of, and he's one of my favorites. He can pack quite a punch in very short poems and really make you think. And I appreciate the value of short poetry. I think it's, we get people at the open mic sometimes. I'm like, you have about 10 short poems in here, and this one is a very, very long piece. But a lot of younger poets think the longer the better. And I'm just like, brevity is sometimes a beautiful thing. So, all right, well, one more question. What would be like your elevator pitch or lightning strike advice for other writers?
I'll say this is something I always tell other poets, mainly that are trying to do performance poetry. Don't feel like you have to put on a performance. The best thing to do is to genuinely make a connection to your work. Meaning, and that might take where it starts as far as with writing the piece, like making sure you're writing about things that are true to you. But making a genuine connection to your work is the most important thing when reading or performing poetry. As long as the listener hears and feels that you have a genuine connection to what you're saying, that's literally all that matters. All the other performance things, the fireworks and all that, isn't completely necessary. You don't have to be loud and boisterous. You don't have to do all these crazy antics while performing. All you have to do is make sure you're feeling what you're saying, and connected to it. And that's all that matters.
I love that. I agree. I love that. So let's hear some of your work.
All right. Well, since we've been talking, maybe I want to share like some shorter poems now.
Sure.
So let me get it pulled up real quick. So I had another poem pulled up, but
now you're inspired to go with the shorties. I love the shorties. Well, we'll do that at our open mic at the Studio 620 that we host in the last Wednesday of the month. I'll be like, all right, we're going to have the lightning round now. So any short poems, come on up here. Try to show the, you know, especially the younger poets, or even newer poets, that you don't have to write a manifesto.
Exactly.
You can say right. So much. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. This one is called Florida Boy. When I was a kid, a neighborhood friend, our apartment complex is called neighborhoods, found a lifeless lizard and popped its eyes out of its sockets on top of the green humming electrical box. This was the first time I can remember seeing a dead thing craft a smile on the face of a boy who does not understand what it means to be cold-blooded. That's that one.
So I visualized it all. Yeah.
This one is called Dull. I once tried cutting my wrists with safety scissors. I had friends who cut and wanted to know what they felt. In 10th grade, all my homies were depressed. I just thought they were cool. What a silly thing, wanting to want to die to fit in.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's a visual. These are all part of your chapbook. Gosh, I have a senior in high school, and yeah, wanting to die to fit in. That line, boy, that sits with you.
Yeah, wanting to want to die to fit in. All right. I guess I'm gonna just keep going and you just tell me when I should stop.
Why don't, how about two more? Let's do two more.
Two more? All right. This one is called Self-Love. The other day, my heart beat so fast, it felt like it wanted to jump out of my body. The awkwardness of putting your hand to your chest and feeling your own life pulsing in it is a strange reflection of our mortality and the discomfort in knowing we are a living, breathing thing running off a machine made of blood and veins and I love yous. Sometimes a broken heart can be more than figurative language. Sometimes I French kiss the mirror, mouth bloody from biting my own tongue. Self-love looks different for everybody.
Love it. I love that.
And
A machine made of I love yous. That's a great line. Go ahead.
Thank you. All right, and the last one, I really like this one. This one's called Music Theory. Life is a staccato played from some kind of wind instrument. God is a composer making heads nod and feet tap. I am the bent-rimmed snare drum who fears his father's hand. He beat the brakes off of break beats to teach me lessons. I learned what anxiety was and how to hide my demons, but never learned how to play a tune.
All these are resonating with me so much.
I'm glad.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's wonderful. It's crazy because when you first came, I was talking about how my father had passed away, and then you've written this book about. Yeah, but like, just there's so much to unpack when a parent passes away, and all that energy they kind of put into you leaves in some way, but it's still there. There's like a ghost, like a residue of it. You're still haunted, but it's like, is this mine or was this his? So interesting, like that, about the learning to play your own tune. But that's what you do as a poet. You're
Yeah.
playing your own tune. Curtis, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for
This
having
was
me. This is
wonderful to hear your perspective, and that's what we want to do through Typewriter Talks, is to see that there's not one right way to be a writer, and you showed a whole new perspective. I think this is our 24th episode. I'm not sure of the number, but you've given us perspective that we haven't gotten from any other writer, so thank you for that.
beautiful. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate you. You've had me thinking about things I've never thought about before. So, yeah, that's awesome. And these days I do so much, and I'm sure you can relate, so much like event organizing and other things that it's good to think about myself as just a writer in this moment,
I know, it's like my favorite thing to do.
you know?
It really is. So thank you everyone for tuning into this episode of Typewriter Talks. And our website for Keep St. Pete Lit is currently under construction. In many ways, it looks like it's dissolving because we haven't done updates because we're about to switch to another website. But keepstpetelit.org is where you can find all, about all of our information. And we're also on all the medias. So if you want to learn more about us, you can find us there. And we will be back next Thursday interviewing another writer. And once again, thank you so much, Curtis, for being here with us.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
All right, everyone. Please continue to read and write on, and we'll see you next time.
Typewriter Talks features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. It is hosted by Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. Listen in to hear discussions on all kinds of writerly topics. Our goal is to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit at www.keepstpetelit.org.